Thursday. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan. We'll also hear from Kara Hart as well. USDA's weekly export sales report this morning for the week ending January 3rd was deemed disappointing by traders. Wheat sales totaled 131,200 metric tons. Corn sales totaled 460,000 tons, both below the lowest trade guesses. Soybean sales showed a net reduction of 612,000 tons, with China canceling 807,000 tons during that week. Wheat sales of 131,200 below a marketing year low and down 78% from the previous week. It's also 76% below the four-week average. Net corn sales at 460,000 tons, down 9% from the previous week, 64% below the four-week average. Again, soybeans showed net cancellations of 612,000 tons, down noticeably from the previous week and the four-week average. Advanced Trading commodity research analyst Brian Basting said, while this morning's export sales data report set the tone for a lower trade, South American weather is also a factor.
I guess the export sales probably kicked us off today. There's some rain in the forecast for Brazil, which is going to help their second crop, corn, just to get planted now. So it's got a long way to go. But there had been some dryness issues. Of course, it did reduce that Brazilian bean crop. But now that some rain's moving in, it's helping their corn, maybe helping a little bit of late beans there. But I think it's kind of late for some of those beans.
Trade talks also kind of a wet rag on this market.
Most of the bearishness is also, at least some of it, may be due to the uncertainty about the China talks. Of course, U.S. And China are talking as we speak here in Beijing and waiting to hear the outcome of that, if there's going to be an extension of the deadline for the tariffs coming up here on March the 2nd. So just kind of a mix of information, but I suppose the export sales is probably weighing the market the most.
U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin have wrapped up the first day of trade talks in Beijing and will return to the bargaining table again tomorrow. This follows 3 days of lower-level trade negotiations. One of the remaining obstacles centers on the enforcement of any trade agreement. Well, despite pressure from a weak farm economy, farmland values only declined slightly in the area served by the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. This area includes portions of the Great Plains states of Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri. The demand for farm real estate remains strong in the fourth quarter, which has helped support land prices. Farmers remain the primary buyers of farmland, accounting for more than 75% of all purchases. With the lower farm income, demand remains strong for farm loans. The Agricultural Credit Survey conducted by the Federal Reserve's 10th District found demand for loan renewals and extensions to be higher, although the loan repayment rates seemed to stabilize at the end of 2018. Higher interest rates are also increasing the cost of financing for farmers. Those interest rates on agricultural loans rose in the fourth quarter, but at a slower pace than other benchmark interest rates. The spread between variable rates charged on farm loans and the prime lending rate has narrowed, reaching the lowest margin since 2007. The best of the best in wheat and soybean research and marketing is underway in Grand Forks. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Kara Hart has this report.
Attendees are digging into soil sampling maps and erosion control, along with a look at pigweeds with NDSU Extension weed scientist Joe Eichley.
The non-herbicide ways to manage weeds have come back into the discussion, mainly because of Palmer and water hemp. Especially when we talk about Palmer, some cultural things to think about are narrow rows for quicker canopy closure. You know, it's one of those things that if we can do it, it actually does help with these weeds. There's been cover crops in the discussion. Basically, what they found with Palmer and water hemp in the southern U.S. is cereal rye can help. It doesn't replace anything. So it can help suppress the early germination, but these are weeds that can germinate the entire summer. So it comes into, we just need to get to that canopy closure.
In preparation for the next growing season, University of Minnesota Associate Professor Robert Cook says pesticides are the typical go-to for controlling soybean aphids, but that shouldn't be the only management tool farmers use. Biological control can be used along with host plant resistance.
And that's the use of pest-resistant crops. And we've got a lot of research showing that these aphid-resistant varieties can be very effective. For soybean aphid management, but unfortunately the availability of well-adapted aphid-resistant varieties is pretty low right now. So there's a lot of work going on at the universities to try to increase that availability, and hopefully the seed companies will be catching on to and trying to make this a more widely available pest management tactic for soybean aphid now that we're dealing with resistance to some of the insecticides.
The crowd is a little light today due to the snowy weather, but those who are attending are actively engaged in discussions. After lunch, NDSU Extension Crops Marketing Economist Frayn Olson will address grain marketing during a time of tariffs. The best of the best in wheat and soybean research and marketing wraps up around 3:30 this afternoon. Reporting Agriculture's Business from the Alaris Center, I'm Kara Hart for the Red River Farm Network.
The Environmental Protection Agency made label changes when renewing the registration of dicamba products for the 2019 growing season. In a webinar on dicamba and weed management, BASF Technical Marketing Manager Chad Asmus was asked how the label changes will impact off-target movement and the long-term availability of the dicamba traits.
The label requirements address all aspects of on-target applications to ensure that. So what is important is the continued training and the ongoing resources. That's why the dicamba applicator training is so important, so growers understand the why behind the how. So the label requirements in conjunction with the continued training is what's going to be important for successful results this year.
And dealing with weed management stewardship, Asma said it's important for farmers to have a plan.
The brunt of the weed control needs to be done up front with a good soil-applied herbicide. And I mentioned earlier that the easiest weed to control is one that's not out of the ground yet. And so being able to rotate those and bring in other sites of action is going to be important for the longevity of all those products.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Sunflowers have had some positive changes in crop insurance programs for the 2019 growing season. National Sunflower Executive Director John Sandbachen says the first change is the updated final planting dates.
For North Dakota producers, I think they're going to be pleased to see is that the final planting date has been extended by 5 days throughout North Dakota. And so, for example, if you had a June 5th late and a final planting date, June 10th is now your date. And if you're in a county that had June 10th, it'll be the 15th. And the thing is, you know, in a year where we've got like a wetter spring or something like that, it's going to be nice to have those 5 extra days and still be able to get, you know, full coverage on your crops. So I think that's just a wonderful thing that we advocated for at RMA, and they worked with us very well and made that happen for 2019.
Tea yields have also been adjusted.
Crop insurance looked at the whole insurance program for sunflower. They re-rated all the counties. They updated tea yields in a lot of cases. You know, we've had some really good yields here the last 2 years, and that's going to probably be reflected in those tea yields. So something for producers to, you know, take a look at also, especially if you're new to sunflower and you don't quite have that production history. It's one of those things that obviously the higher tea yields you're going to have, the better your APH is going to be. So something else that we wanted to make sure we got done.
The tax extenders language was dropped from the budget agreement that is moving through Congress. That includes the $1 per gallon biodiesel tax credit that expired at the end of 2017. Farm state lawmakers are still trying to find a path forward, but Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says they're at a dead end right now. The National Barley Growers Association is urging Congress to ratify the new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and lift the steel and aluminum tariffs. Funding for the Wheat and Barley Scab Initiative and the Small Grains Genomic Initiative is also being sought. While on Capitol Hill, the Barley Group and the Beer Institute partnered with the message, "No Barley, No Beer." Senate Agriculture Committee leaders Pat Roberts and Debbie Stabenow, along with Senator Tom Udall, have reintroduced the Pesticide Registration Improvement Act, urging swift passage of the legislation. The bill provides funding to the Environmental Protection Agency for a more predictable and effective evaluation process for pesticides at issue. It includes technical changes that extends authority for the EPA to collect updated pesticide registration and maintenance fees through fiscal year 2023. The future of farm equipment business includes autonomous technology. artificial intelligence and data. Association of Equipment Manufacturers Senior Vice President of Agricultural Services Kurt Blades says the labor supply shortage could drive significant changes in the equipment business.
A large portion of a piece of equipment's weight is directly there because of the width. The width is there because you need to be as efficient as you can with fewer operators. So if you remove that operator equation, all of a sudden what needs to be, you know, 100 feet wide, maybe it needs to be 6 feet wide, and the piece of equipment is running on its own for a very long time. That fundamentally changes things in terms of the usage of people. It changes, you know, opens up a whole different idea of where you can go from materials, from soil compaction. It's incredible to think about what that could do.
At the sidelines of the National Farm Machinery Show in Louisville, Blade cited a prototype swarm tractor that is only 3 feet wide.
It's a concept, but the idea was a farmer would have, you know, 12 of these and employ them on a farm to just run through the field and swarm a field and then come back and then dock and move to the next field. I mean, you think about what that does to fundamentally changing the way things happen, the way we farm. It's pretty remarkable. Now, this is cutting edge stuff, and we're probably, you know, 10 to 25 years away from this being coming to fruition, but it's certainly the direction that we're going.
For the full year, the Andersons reports net income of $41.5 million. That's down $1 million from the previous year. The Ohio-based company focuses on grain marketing, ethanol, plant nutrition, and transportation. Strong margins during the harvest season brought positive gains to the grain division. Rising railcar demand also boosted income for the division. This is the Red River Farm Network. Good afternoon. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers is actively seeking candidates to succeed longtime Executive Director Dave Torgerson, who will retire March 31st. The Executive Director would serve as the Principal Administrator of the Minnesota Wheat Research and Promotion Council and the Minnesota Association of Wheat Growers. Applications and resumes will start to be reviewed March 1st, with interviews following. The application process will stay open until someone new is hired. Pilgrim's Pride is reporting a fourth quarter loss of $7.3 million. That compares to profits of $134 million a year ago. The chicken processing company cites lower chicken prices and weather disruptions hurting its U.S. and European businesses. Fertilizer company Nutrien will pay $340 million for ActAgro. ActAgro produces sustainable soil health and plant health products. The deal is expected to be finalized in the first half of the year. Nutrien itself was formed a year ago when Potash Corp and Agrium merged. EPA also has released its new draft of the Clean Water Rule. American Farm Bureau Federation says more time is needed to evaluate the updated waters of the U.S. rule, but called it a major step forward. The rule has been in and out of court since St. Cloud, Minnesota-based attorney Kale Van Bruggen expects more litigation.
It's still unclear where we're going to end. I think the court cases are going to continue, and everyone will be wondering, you know, what's the final rule that we'll land with.
Checking markets before we leave you this afternoon. March wheat, Minneapolis is down 4, July is down 6. Chicago March is down 15.5, and Kansas City down 11.75. March corn down 4 cents, December corn's down 3, March beans are down 13, November beans down 11. February live cattle down 7, but the April up 69 cents. March feeder cattle is 62 higher. August feeder cattle up 40. February hogs are down 5 cents. April hogs down 60 cents. On our farm calendar today, the American Crystal Sugar Company Growers Seminar continues on the 21st. That'll be at the Grafton Parish Center. Also, the best in the best in wheat and soybean research continues today at the Alaris Center. Tomorrow, they will be in Fargo. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. Have a good day. This is the Red River Farm Network.